Welcome to Real Talk JavaScript, the weekly talk show with advice and insight into the technologies and practices currently being used to build web applications in the real world. Each week, Ward Bell, Dan Wallen, and John Papa talk to industry experts about their experiences writing, deploying, and maintaining web applications in HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. And now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to episode 46 of Real Talk JavaScript. In this session, we're going to talk about using new JavaScript features. And I have my good buddy, Ward Bell, with me. How you doing, Ward?
Hello, Dan.
What have you been up to?
Got my solar on my roof, waiting for inspections.
Oh, no, I didn't know you were doing that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm trying to, you know, get electrified here.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Was it a, you know, we looked at that, you know, I live in Arizona. We have a little bit of sun here in Phoenix.
Yeah, I've heard.
And we looked into it. Yeah, it's been several years ago, but it was actually sort of price prohibitive unless we planned on staying in the same house for 20 plus years, which we weren't. Is yours a pretty good deal out there in California, or is it still pretty expensive to?
Well, it makes a big difference in California. For one, we don't have any trees that shade us. That's often a problem. I have friends in Austin, for example, where it's also sunny and it's shady and it's hard for them. But we got wide open view of the sky all day, and California utility electric prices are going up 8 or 9% per year.
Yikes.
And there's a 30% tax credit, and the prices of the solar equipment are, you know, they've been heading down. I think they're about to flatten out. So it's a, you know, it's a good time economically to do it.
Yeah.
Well, good. I mean, do you need electricity?
No, you don't really. It'll be a big step up for us because heretofore we've just been rubbing sticks together.
Well, and that gives me an opportunity to mention John's not going to be with us today. He's actually, I think, driving right now out to, he's going to code on the beach. Isn't that what that's called, Ward? He's going to?
That's what he's going to say he's doing. I think he's going to be out there sipping something on the
beach. Sipping on the beach. And I want to introduce our guest, Tara Manixik. And Tara is a phenomenal person. I've had an opportunity to meet her several times at things like ngConf. But Tara, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Excellent. Where are you located, by the way, Tara?
So I'm in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Oh, okay.
Just like all the other developers.
Right. That's where all our developers go.
They like that. Do you get the lake effect there?
No, we're too far south. We get the Kentucky effect here, which is like the bourbon effect. It's
the
quite
Kentucky
nice.
Effect.
Wow.
I don't think I've heard of that one.
What is that?
It just means we have a lot of bourbon at our fingertips.
Ah.
That is a new one to me, oddly enough. I travel all over the U.S. like nonstop, but I've never heard that before, so that's pretty funny.
Okay, so I'm going to really test it. I want to test it. Hold on, Dan. This is very important. Oh, have you ever done the Statue of Liberty? Have you done the Statue of Liberty, Tara?
No.
No? Okay, stick your two fingers in the bourbon, light them on fire, and hold them over your head.
I do not think that's going to help my coding very much, Ward.
No, you don't need those fingers anyway. But it's a great nighttime thing to do with any high alcohol.
Is this what you do at night, Ward?
This is what I do. Like
that
I said.
It explains a lot, actually.
How much bourbon is left in the bottle when you do this?
Well, you... All right, moving on. I had to get that in.
Nice. Yes. I'm so glad you did, because I've just been, I mean, we could just stop right now because I've been educated so much already. But anyway, so Tara, let me introduce everyone else to you. So Tara's a lifelong student, teacher, and maker. You've spent your career with JavaScript on both the back and front end. And Tara is a developer advocate for Progress, a Google developer expert, and an international technical speaker. And she's awesome. Very fun person, by the way. That was a side note. She didn't put that in the bio. And focuses on conveying the code bases she's learned to others. Looks like in your free time, Tara, you do all kinds of fun stuff. So, Tara, you launched the Cincinnati chapter of Women Who Code, which is awesome, and the Cincinnati branch of Node School. And then aside from that, it looks like you stay busy with, is it soldering? Is that what I'm reading right?
Yeah, so it's, I mean, like, I still make stuff in my free time, but I like to do it with solder, clay, and wool. So I, like, work on soldering things. I have even, a little radio kit that has about, like, so many, like, 60 plus solder points that need to be put together. And then I, you know, do pottery and I sew and knit. So always making.
That keeps you. Well, see, the reason I asked, I'm reading this going, so do you solder on the clay with wool? I was trying to figure out how this tied together. Cause
I don't particularly do that because that is a fire hazard. But
that's kind of what I was thinking.
But there is like conductive thread that you can use in like sewing and knitting to kind of like send a, you know, basically able to send a bit of energy to different things in fabric. So you can combine some of these. Like, so when I can do different like IoT devices that can use a conductive thread.
Nice. That'd be a whole nother podcast we might have to do. That sounds interesting. But
Last time I was soldering, I was doing it in the nude. I don't know why. Very bad idea.
What? Okay, that was TMI for sure.
I'm just saying, word tip for the day, soldering in the nude, not a good idea.
There's got to be some bourbon or something involved with that one too, but that's another story.
I think, you know, is this like the electronic version of the Statue of Liberty? Is that you're trying to do an IoT device?
Well, yeah.
And with that, guess what? We're going to move on, folks.
Let's move on.
Tara, so you obviously work a lot with JavaScript. And one of the things we were going to talk about as we were kind of prepping for the show this morning was, what are some of the kind of cool JavaScript features out there? So I'd like you to kind of address that. And then I think one of the challenges we all have is, you know, Ward has this phenomenal app out there, let's say, but it's 5 years old. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when's the right time to upgrade to these features? Or should you not worry about it? Or what's the process there? So let's start with what would you like to touch on from a feature perspective? What are some of the things you really are enjoying about the latest ECMAScript versions out there?
So I focused a bit on the latest ES 2019, and there are some interesting features in there. But you know, some people might say it's like not the most exciting of the ES releases. But my favorite thing that's happening now is ever since ES 6 basically, I'm sure you two are aware, it took about 6 years to actually deliver, and so that was like, you know, quite a big change for people. It was a lot to deal with. We didn't know when it was coming out and we didn't know who was supporting it. And since then, the steering, like TC39, basically the technical committee that surrounds around making the decisions for ECMAScript, has made it so that each release is much more consumable. And so like you'll see with 2019, there are just not as many features as like ES6 had a ton. But what's nice about that is then we're able to actually, you know, use them. And so like there are a few that are exciting, like flat map is really exciting. It's one of the, I guess, what people may call major features. They're not distinguished or sorted as major and minor features, but in the community, we tend to look at them in that way. And so flat map is really exciting because you're basically able to go through and map an object and flatten it into a single array. So there's things like that. And also like object from entries is one that I found that I needed before it came out. And that's basically you're getting a list of key value pairs to an object. And it's like the opposite of object.entries, which would take an object into, make an array into an object. So now you have these back and forth where you can take an object, make it into an array, or do an array into an object. And my favorite part about that is basically what we use libraries for, like Lodash. You can see Axel Rauschmeier, sorry, did a whole section in his website Tuality that showed what we use Lodash for being done with object to and from entries.
Yeah, he has some, and I think his name's come up before. We need to get him on the show, probably.
He's awesome. And he's got this new-ish book called JS for Impatient Programmers. Not that any of us are impatient programmers.
No.
But But it's available on his website, and it covers ES1 through ES2019. And he does a great job at really like deep diving into the features of ECMAScript.
Yeah, I'm putting links to this stuff in the show notes for you folks listening at home.
You know, this is great because what you basically just described is you can round trip from objects to arrays and arrays and back, which is great because in the old days that was called write manual code, job security, mm-hmm. I guess you could say.
Yeah.
If I'm still on an app, though, that's maybe using a few ES6, ES2015 features, but mostly ES5, what are some of the biggest jumps I'm going to have to kind of know about? Because, you know, what you described is awesome because that's super useful in certain cases. Mm-hmm. But I can totally see some folks going, but we're not even on ES2015, really.
Yeah. And honestly, the biggest one is one that I just did in a project. And it's basically taking things from promises to async await, which I feel like the biggest point to say about that is that you don't have to do it. I think all these, like, the biggest one that always comes to mind is with ES6, we got arrow functions. And I know people went through their code and was like, replace all function word with arrow function. And it's like, no. You don't need to do
idea.
That.
Yeah.
And I kind of see people being confused with the choosing between promise and async await. And when it comes down to it, you know, async await is basically syntactical sugar over promises. Like, it still returns a promise. It's just, you know, you're kind of wrapping your function in the async, and then telling, using that await word to tell it to, you know, wait for this to come through. But I think that's the biggest one, is like, first you have to understand promises, because we had callbacks before. Now you have to understand promises. And then once you understand promises, they're like, okay, but now check out async await. And you're like, okay, you know, these are big steps, basically.
A whole learning curve, a whole mountain to climb.
Yeah.
Ward, what do you have a favorite when it comes to things like promises? Are you using async await much these days? Or?
Well, you know, I'm using observables a lot. And I use it where you would often use a promise. So I don't have async await in a lot of places. However, when I'm testing my observables, I often find it convenient to convert it to a promise, which is easy, and then use async await to march through it. And the reason that that is convenient is that the test code reads linearly. You know, your eyes aren't dashing left in and out and in and out of things. That's the real argument, I think, for async await. And it cuts out a lot of boilerplate code around using promises, or in this case, testing observables. So I use it a lot there, and I probably use it wherever I run into a promise, just to, again, for the same reason, it makes it easier on the reader to figure out what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, and that's exactly why I changed it in a recent project I was working on, is because the person who wrote the code for us is another engineer on our team, had written at a time where it was, in his mind, the best decision to make a like promiseify wrapper that he then wrapped around everything that needed a promise. And just readability wise, it's like, okay, this would be a great place to change it to async await.
Yeah, for me, I'm kind of similar to what Ward mentioned. On my front end stuff, I do tend to use observables a lot nowadays. But for instance, Node.js running on the server side, which I do for some projects, async await there has been just amazing compared to, as you mentioned, Tara, you know, everything used to be callbacks, especially with Node. And converting, which did take some conversion, because I actually have to sometimes, it depends on the library you might be using, of course, but, you know, it used to be you'd use Bluebird or one of these other options out there for promisifying, which I think that's even a library. And now that promise is actually, you know, a full scale object built in, I don't tend to use those as much as I used to, because I can wrap kind of a, you know, something that's not playing the game very well, can kind of wrap that in a promise, do your reject if you need to and all that, and then use async await. And wow, does it clean up the code base?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where it really shines is when you have to do something async, then do some work, then follow that by the next thing, and then wait. And so when you have these chains of asynchronous activity, async await just makes it so much more readable than trying to plow your way through the thens and the
kind of charges. Going back to block coding instead of these.
Yep.
You don't like Pyramids of Doom, Tara?
Come on, only in video games.
Yeah, Pyramids of Doom are awesome. All right, maybe not.
So tell me what you think about this, Tara, because the thing that I use a lot, and I wish they would make even better, is, just like that, the word escaped me, but what destructured assignment.
Destructuring, yeah.
Yeah. I wish I knew how to destructure stuff out of the constructor, but into the this variables, but there's no syntax for that yet, but I think destructuring does a lot to, again, clean up the code, because there's otherwise before that, if it was object.a.b.c.d, you'd be sitting there, you'd have six lines that were all plucking out those properties, and I like assigning it all in one line. Again, I'm a one-liner guy. How about you?
Yes.
Yes and no.
Yes. So it's funny because this conversation kind of came up a little bit in one of the ES 2019 minor features of the symbol prototype description. Have you heard of this before?
No. Go. Keep going.
So it's basically this has always existed, but now you have the ability to get this. And it's basically, it helps teams communicate intentions. People like to look at it in that way. And it's basically you have a symbol and you're able to do, to assign a description on it by just attaching a string. And then you can do mySymbol.description to get that information and log it out. So you get a little more information about that actual symbol. But with destructuring assignment, I feel like it's kind of that same concept of just being able to get more information out of your code without, like you said, basically, without kind of polluting the code space that you're looking at.
Kind of metadata, if you will, about code in a sense. In other words, keeping it clean in, using different techniques. Yeah.
But, I mean, I feel like this is why we shouldn't have, const A and const B. Because, I mean, I think that the cleaner code is to have the more descriptive code. And so I am an 80-character limit, it's hard to get it all on one line when you want to be descriptive in the variable names. But I definitely think it's worth it to just have a variable name that tells you that this is, user's zip code in travel.
Yeah, like, I'm with you. I'm totally with you. I'm one of those. I still do comments because there are some code snippets, and I'm sure you've both hit this, where you're like, I and anyone else that looks at this code in the future, no matter how good I name this, based on the algorithm I'm doing, there's just no way I'm going to remember why I did it this way.
Yeah.
So in that case, I'll use a comment, but I'm with you. There's so many cases where I don't think you need a comment where you do what you said, user in zip code for region or whatever it is. And I'm like that too.
And then we have things like prettier and, standard that will format it in a way that it makes it even more readable for users. So you may go past the 80 character limit and then it figures out how to make it more readable.
Let's take a break to hear from our sponsors.
Are you building a web application? Need to deliver it soon and don't have the people to do it? Maybe you're not sure your company has the skill set or experience to do it. And maybe we can help. I'm your host, Ward Bell, and my day job is building applications for companies like yours. I don't do it alone. I'm president of IdeaBlade, a consultancy that specializes in enterprise web application development. We're particularly strong in Angular, RxJS, NGRX Redux on the front end, and .NET and Microsoft technologies on the server. We're a small, tight-knit group of people handpicked by me for their expertise, experience, integrity, and team spirit. Maybe we can help you with architectural guidance and hands-on development. And if there's something we don't know, and in our field, really, there's too much to know,
We can draw on our personal connections in the Microsoft RD, MVP, and Google GDE networks, as well as our international circle of really great developers, people we know and trust personally. If you got a project that's keeping you up at night, shoot us an email at info@ideablade.com. That's info@ideablade.com. And now back to the show.
And we're back. So, Tara, you were telling us about some of the new features, some of the features that have been around for a little while. One of the things I know that you had brought up when we were initially talking was kind of this migration process that we all have to go through. Do you have any tips or keys or things you'd want to mention to people that might be kind of stuck in the old world and they want to move forward? Like, what would you do first? Or I'll kind of leave it up to you there.
Well, I see that this is a problem for a lot of people, especially because, you know, you don't want to leave any. There's the thing is you never want to leave any applications behind. And we always have technical debt that who has time to deal with. And then, like, you'll see this, we were saying ahead of time with differential loading in Angular that's now being offered. And basically, it's basically giving you two builds of your Angular project. And there's the modern build that's using and like defaulting to ES 2015, and then a legacy build with ES 5 of your application. So you have these two builds, and they'll automatically, the browser will automatically get the bundle that they need. And that gives you a lot, takes a lot off of your plate, basically. So then you can have these two different versions and still have your application for a lot of users. If you're not using Angular and you have to deal with this on your own, I think a big thing to basically realize is figuring out what could be cleaned up in your code, where it's supported, and if it does make your code more readable for your developers.
So yeah, that I would totally agree with you. First off, jumping way back to when you started, which is, I like the, what'd you say, no application left behind?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one, actually. I'm gonna totally steal that from you, Tara.
If I see shirts that say that, it better have a TM on it.
Yeah, there you go. I'll put the TM, Tara. But it's difficult in some of the bigger enterprise, you know, environments. Moving forward this way is somewhat challenging because, you know, oftentimes if you are going to move forward, now we have to start talking about, do we go with Babel, whatever you like to call it? Do you go with TypeScript? Because, you know, there are still our browsers out there, of course, that aren't going to support all these features. So do you have any preference there, or does it depend on the project, on what you choose to actually, you know, transpile, for example, your code?
So I'm kind of a individual in the sense, or not individual, there are more people like this, but I really want transpilers to go away.
That would be nice.
because, and I think that we're coming to a point where when you develop, you are able to have smaller feature sets that we see from ECMAScript come through that, you know, we could go through and, so on this release, like any place that we were, we needed to look at object assign or something that we can replace with object from entries, and we could change that. We could flat map wherever we were, like, iterating through something and, you know, pushing it onto an array into flat map. So it's small things that we can change at a time. So it's a little easier to keep up the maintenance with that. So in development mode, it's becoming more and more easy to be able to make these switches. But with old applications that haven't been touched for a long time, you know, that are, you know, were made, you know, 5 to 10 years ago, and then they're still working, but they haven't been touched. Like this actually happened with Flat and Flat Map because of MooTools. It was basically a polyfill. Like, you know, basically a lot of things that come out of ECMAScript are things that we've made libraries or polyfills to make the code work better for us. And ECMAScript is trying to make the code natively better for us. So, but you'll see this where it may break things on the internet because, like, the MooTools one, I think they were going to name it, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, it ended up being switched to FlatMap because they had a different name for it that conflicted with what was happening in the MooTools code, in the MooTools polyfill. Let me pull that up real quick. Yeah, so basically MooTools had something that interfered with what the new standard was coming out, and it's because it's, you know, legacy code that hasn't been touched, but so many things had been built building MooTools that would have broken a lot of applications that were currently online and being used. So that's the biggest place where transpilers are going to come into play, is dealing with that. But then it's the age-old question of what's the cutoff point? You know, what do we stop supporting when? And as the language progresses and evolves, which at this rate we're going to be doing more and more rapidly, when do we let go? Because we, you know, even when in Titanic she said, "I'll never let go," she did exactly that. She let go. So, you know, we've got to as well.
Uh-huh. I'll tell my customers about how they got to let go of IE.
There you go. See how that goes, Ward.
Yeah, I'm going to tell them.
You got the new edge. Come on.
I don't want to say nobody's using Edge. My friends at Microsoft, everybody's using Edge.
John immediately jumps back on the call out of nowhere.
But I mean, even Edge, you know, they had to give up the engine, right? Mm-hmm. The old engine. And
which was,
you know,
a smart decision.
We're all under the question of whether you want competitive technologies, because that's how we advance. On the other hand, they create hassle for us too. So, I just don't think we can count even on the modern browsers all moving forward at the same rate with the latest ECMAScript functions and features. And so it feels like transpilers are here to stay.
If you look at the compatibility charts, you'll see a lot of the newer ones. The browsers and Node are really keeping up to date with that. It's quite impressive and hope-inducing.
Well, there you go. I mean, you're an optimist.
I am,
and I'm a curmudgeon in some ways.
And one thing, speaking of curmudgeons, I do want to touch on is the fact that we've been in JavaScript for a while, and it's constantly like, oh, JavaScript sucks, JavaScript is no good. Like, you tend to hear that a lot of times. And one thing that I think people underestimate is their impact on the language. ECMAScript actually has a process for bringing new features into the language that make it a little more attainable to make it happen. If you see something say something that you want changed in JavaScript, it's like this four-stage process, but there is a strawman process where you're able to, members of ECMAScript can bring ideas to the table, or if you're not in ECMAScript, you know, you can reach out to these members of ECMAScript of TC39, sorry, that are very approachable and very friendly and nice.
See, they didn't used to be. So now that's really encouraging.
Is that right?
It had a reputation for being more off-putting, and some of the language was more off-putting. So that's a great step forward. I'm also thinking that, let's suppose you have what you think is a great idea. Somebody might tell you why that might not fit and how you can achieve something like that in a way that you might not know. So that sounds very promising.
So we have this new thing that Daniel Ehrenberg, Little Dan, started with the TC39 and different educators in the community. And I was lucky enough to join this group, and it's called basically the TC39 Educators Outreach Group. So they team one of us with one of what they call champions. So each proposal has a champion that basically does the work that comes with submitting and creating a proposal and getting it into spec. And so we work with them to basically get more information out about their proposal and about upcoming proposals to get people more knowledge about them. Like a huge one that I'm very excited about coming out is temporal. And that's basically dealing with date in JavaScript.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Right.
Dates, so I just want you to know, Tara, you're now touching on my favorite topic of all of programming.
Is that right?
Oh, dates and time zones are my favorite.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, I'm lying.
Oh, boy.
My nose is growing for sure. They're the most evil thing ever invented, actually. But sorry, I interrupted. Go ahead.
Right? But exactly. So, I mean, that's been a pain point for so long. And this just, like, goes to show that, you know, there is something that can be done about it. So, you know.
So, what's the name of this group? I'm sorry, I missed it, Tara.
Of them, the technical committee? TC39.
Well, no, the TC39 is the technical committee, but you were saying there's some education oriented group?
Yes, educators outreach group. It's basically, you know, like you were saying, Ward, they may have had the reputation in the past where they weren't as approachable, where it was, you know, not the most maybe open or welcoming organization. And now they may have understood this as well back there and didn't go about it right. But they understand how big of a deal it is to have community aware of what's going on, to have community be surrounding the proposals and the passion they have about making the language better, and why TC39 is so important to getting the language we use every day to a point where it makes it even more enjoyable.
Let's take a break to hear from our sponsor.
Hi, folks. Ward Bell here. I'd like to tell you about a wonderful tech conference coming up in Las Vegas in November, Dev Intersection. Dev Intersection is for web application developers, especially those of you working at the intersection of Microsoft and Angular technologies. John, Dan, and I will be speaking there. So are a lot of bright, thoughtful, and really friendly speakers who know their stuff and who really want to meet you. The talks are great. The workshops are killer. John and Dan have a great workshop on Angular. But the conversations you'll have in the hallways, lunchroom, and after-hours events with speakers and fellow attendees, those conversations are gold. They're why you need to go to a conference and not just watch one on TV. So join us at Dev Intersection, November 18th through 20th in Las Vegas, Nevada. Learn more and register at www.devintersection.com. And if you register with my code, BELL, B-E-L-L, you could get a discount. See you there.
Well, that's really awesome to hear, actually, now that you're kind of involved with that, Tara, because I'm with Ward back in the day. Sadly, it's kind of dates us a little bit. I mean, Ward's only coming up on like 32, I think, now. But
what? I thought it was 25.
Oh, maybe I'm off. Yeah, maybe I'm off.
Yeah, but you're always trying to age me.
I mean, he acts like he's 18.
Now that's giving him way too much credit. I would not, right, Ward? You'd even probably go, no, I haven't matured to 18 yet.
No, I'm still that 8-year-old boy.
I'm still, yeah, stuck way back there. According to my wife, anyway, I'm way back. But anyway, back in the day, it definitely was kind of a club, if you will, in my opinion. And, you know, if you did have, well, I mean, first off, we didn't have GitHub. We didn't have the nice way to post issues. And it wasn't nearly as good. You know, you could go to the W3C site, W3.org, something like that, and possibly hope that something would happen, and there was even email groups and things. But it sounds like not only are they way more open, and I've seen this too. I can't remember one of the guys' names. He's on Twitter very, very heavily, and I've never met him, but he seems super cool. He posts about all these cool new things that you've been mentioning that they're either considering. One I just saw was the nullable coalescing operator, the double question mark. Which I love because I use that in C#. But anyway, nowadays, not only it sounds like, is it more approachable to submit these type of things, but also, you know, they even have this outreach group that you're part of. And that's pretty cool to hear.
Yeah. And on a point of speaking of GitHub, I think that's another really big point of when you're changing your applications to include the new features is version control. It's like commit frequently and often. I know that's redundant, but that's how much I mean it. When you're making these changes to your code to change into the new features, that'll just save you so much headache and time.
Are you saying I might have to revert, possibly?
Just never. Maybe. It'll get you so much better at using Git.
Ward, I know for a fact, Ward never has had to do that. He just is like, nope, I need this feature and it's going to happen. Right, Ward?
He just closes his eyes and types.
That's right.
That's called, yes, we call that a hacking attack. What do you think's the next thing happening here? What do people need to do to catch on to this?
So I think that, like we said before, Axel Rauschmeier's Tuality site is really great to see the different updates. But the biggest one is actually just going to TC39's GitHub repo and looking at the proposals, because you can see a chart that tells you what's coming down the pipeline, and, you know, we'll link you to their different specs that give you a really quick gist of what these features are. And then from there, basically, you can search, like, so many people are pretty great about showing you how to use these once they come out as actual features. But just being on top of things and seeing what's coming through will help you understand what can be possible with your code that you're writing right now that may not be available now. Like I said, like with Temporal, you know, it will make it easier for you to handle dates, date and time. So it's good to know that, you know, that will be coming in time. Didn't.
So I'm a big TypeScript user, and I kind of rely on the evolution of TypeScript itself to tell me what's coming, really coming in it. Because, you know, as you were saying, an idea like Temporal has got to work its way through the various stages. And maybe I'm really forward thinking and I want to look at it at stage zero. I don't know that it's called stage zero, but whatever. But, you know, about the time it looks like it's really going to land, TypeScript says, okay, we'll polyfill that until it actually does come, and then they pull that back out. And so I kind of, you know, what do you think about that strategy about letting, you know, A, using TypeScript, and B, using TypeScript to let you know when there's a new feature that, or it looks like it's going to land?
I think that's a fantastic strategy. I think they do a really good job of keeping up to date with everything, and it takes the onus off of the developer. And that's the biggest bonus about all of this, is just making things easier for developers, because, you know, we're using this language day in, day out. So, you know, TypeScript is basically compiling what you need, or, you know, basically compiling it to what works well on the browsers, and you're able to do the latest and greatest while you code, and eventually the browsers catch up. So, like I said, dream world, as soon as this feature's come out, the browsers support them, and we can use them immediately. So in the living day, it's great to have something like TypeScript that lets you still use everything, lets you see what's coming out next because they're letting you use it. And but also things like Twitter are really good, following people like Dan and like Brian Turlson, and seeing what new is coming out, you know, while you're sitting in a lift going to the next place is always nice.
Definitely. It's challenging to keep up with, I think. And I think we all feel kind of, you know, you hear imposter syndrome come up a lot. And I think that's especially true in this world. Well, I'll speak for myself, because while I'm pretty comfortable with, say, the maybe ES 2015, 2016 features, I was taking a look at the 2019 stuff that you were mentioning. I was actually on Axel's site. And one of those, you know, they get into some pretty deep stuff, like Jason.stringify, you mentioned small changes are coming, and that's like a teeny one, but it's related to, I just read through it real quick while you were talking about some other things, and it sounds like, you know, between UTF-8 and UTF-16, there can be some challenges there with Jason.stringify. And so, you know, it's things like that I read through and go, oh my gosh, I never would have known that, you know, because it's just kind of under the covers. But they're one of those essential things because, you know, Jason.stringify is a good example. A lot of people will clone with that, including myself.
Mm-hmm.
And until you run into problems with dates, for example, because it doesn't work so good with that. And then you're trying to figure out why your clone isn't, you know, preserving the data exactly as it was. And it's all these little things they're doing. I like personally, and we'll get your last comment on here and we'll wrap up, but mm-hmm. I personally like that they're doing these smaller releases because don't you think it's just easier to follow and keep up with?
Exactly. And so things like Will from JSON, like it's kind of like TypeScript. It's trying to help you prevent you from making these mistakes while you're coding by kind of giving you better standards. And another thing that's pretty funny, like, so I tend to go down rabbit holes when I look up these different things. And talking about, you know, representable things in UTF-8 and, you know, going down the line of all the things that were created in Unicode and everything, there were compatibility issues in the very beginning to figure out the right keys because there were two different types of typewriters that had conflicting key representation. So we've had compatibility issues all the way down since typewriters. So
wow.
Just remember that.
I had not heard that story, but that, you know, we can make a whole movie about that probably.
Oh yeah. I mean, it'd probably be a Netflix special, but you know.
Yeah, well, that's okay. That's all right. I subscribe. Well, thanks so much, Tara. We could go on and on and on, but I know, sadly, we have to bring it to an end. But thank you for all the info. Before we wrap up, what we like to do is we'll kind of go around the room here, and I'll go to Ward in a second. But if you can give us someone that you think would be useful to follow on Twitter or maybe a website or a tool or really any feature that you want to wrap up with that you think people should know about. I'll come back to you in just a moment and let you think about it. But Ward, do you have anything you want to share with us today?
Well, we're recording during the time that 50 years after Apollo 11. And so that got me looking at a lot of stuff. And one of the things I saw was an MIT science reporter, The Computer for Apollo, in 1965. And it took me into the Wayback Machine, where I got to see what this incredible miniaturized computer was that was sitting there in the capsule. Because as you probably knew it, they were these giant rooms full of stuff, right? And they couldn't put a whole computer in a room in there. And so this news or documentary is fascinating because it's full of that sort of air of discovery and wonder at what things were in 1965. And a couple of things that just stand out there that may tease you to go look at it. One is the user interface, which consisted of, okay, just memorize all these verbs, 41, 52, 53, 50. You knew them by number. You type in that, so move is 53, telescope is 72, and that's how you gave a command. And then you had three registries to either display or enter information. And that was the UX. So that takes me back. They had read-only memory and then a dynamic memory for read-write memory for whatever you were putting in there. The read-only memory was a program written in gold wires threaded through a fabric, sewn into a fabric.
So cool.
That is cool. Then this video shows the process of building these things and meticulously taking little ceramic cores for their memory and threading wires through by hand to make the read-write memory.
man, I kind of want to do that now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I was thinking about you when you were beginning there and talking about textiles.
Yeah, and I also really love tedious tasks.
Yeah, then this is perfect for you.
That sounds awesome.
Because they actually they wove the pearl so that it could not be erased, right? Because it was in the fabric. The other shocking thing is that you see that a lot of these menial tasks were carried about out by banks and banks of women. And by looking at the photograph, you would say maybe they were in their 30s or 40s. And they are always referred to as girls. The girls are doing this, the girls are doing that. And you just, your head sinks as you realize that the culture of the time is as much on display as the technology of the time. Anyway, if these kinds of things grab you, check it out.
That's really cool. So I take it you believe the moon landing was real then? I'm just kidding.
No, I know it was faked. I realize that for sure all those astronauts did in fact go to Las Vegas, hole up in a hotel room where they were delivered lots of drinks and hookers while they waited for it to come back, and then they were shipped back to wherever they were. I absolutely believe that.
That's the other Netflix special we're going to see.
That's the I can go get that one for you if you want.
We have a whole new podcast we could do, Conspiracy Theories Ward. We should.
It could have happened. I'm not saying it did. But it could have happened.
The Conspiracy Ward? Is that what you would call it?
The Conspiracy Ward. There you go.
Exactly.
Well, Tara, what would you like to share with us to wrap up here?
So we were just lucky enough on our DevRel team recently to pull over one of our NativeScript engineers, Stanimira Vueva. And she's been doing, before she even joined the DevRel team, she's been doing a lot of talks on Angular and V8 and, you know, Node in general. And they're really great. I highly recommend checking her out on Twitter. It's Stanimira, Stanimira, Vlaeva. And checking out her talks as well. We both did JSConf EU this year. I did one on ES 2019 features if you want to check that out. And she did one on V8. So yeah, highly recommend checking her work out because it's extremely helpful for developers.
Hey, speaking of conferences, what's the next one set for you?
Front Conference in Zurich at the end of August. Fun. Yeah, I'm bringing the, let's see, he'll be 7 months old at that point. I'm bringing the 7 month old.
Nice. Exciting.
Yeah.
That could be an interesting trip across the Atlantic there, but it'd be
fun. I already took him to Berlin and he was perfect. So he's going to give me hell probably.
He's a world traveler.
He is. I mean, he was in Paris twice in utero. So that kid.
Nice.
Yeah.
Put him to work.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
Exactly.
Well, for my wrap-up, I was going to do a real simple one, but Ward, you got me thinking about what you mentioned, so I'm going to add on to some things there. But the one I was going to mention is, hopefully everybody knows it, but I'm always surprised how many people don't know it. And I think, Tara, you briefly mentioned it, but we didn't really go into it, and that is just the Can I Use website.
Yeah.
Because I think you mentioned the domain, and if you know you're listening and you haven't been there, and you do wonder about what features are supported in the browsers, definitely go to caniuse.com. It's actually a pretty amazing site because it gives you all kinds of stats about, yeah, this feature supported on this, on like desktop versus mobile, and very powerful. So definitely something to check out. To wrap up with what Ward was mentioning, so a lot of folks probably know, this is already something that I've put in the show notes, but you can get the Apollo 11 assembly code on GitHub.
No way.
GitHub and search. In fact, I'll put it in for you too, because I put it into a special show notes area, but I'll send it in the message here too. And on Pluralsight, they actually have a free course by a good friend of mine. His name is Simon Allardyce, and Simon is awesome. He did a free course called 1969 Moon Landing, the Code of the Apollo 11 Guidance Computer. And it's real short. It's only 30 minutes. But he actually walks you through some of the assembly code and some of the comments just to get some kind of interesting facts about what was going on. So definitely something to check out. Pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Well, with that, Tara, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your time. And Ward, always good to have you as well. For those listening, Tune in every Tuesday, and we'll have the next episode of Real Talk JavaScript coming out shortly.
Thanks for listening to Real Talk JavaScript. This show and all of our shows are available at www.realtalkjs.com with links and notes. John and Ward would love to hear what you think, especially about potential guests and topics for future shows. Follow and send them a message on Twitter at @realtalkjs.